and half hour.
So 11th chapter. Shri Shuka Uvacha Bhagavan Atman Atmanam Rama Uttama Kalpakaihi Sarva Devamayam Devam Ije Thacharyavan Makaihi. Sarva Devamayam Devam Ije Atha Acharyavan Makhaihi. So under the guidance of Acharya, he is performing sacrifices and worshipping his own self. So Yatha Taror Moolani Shechanayana Tripyanti Tatskhanda Bhujopashaka Pranopacharacha Yathendriyanam Tathaiva Sarvarhanam Achyutejya. By worshipping Achyuta, everything else is worshipped. Already, he is like the root of the tree. He is like the stomach and the body. Okay, by feeding stomach, all parts get nourished, like that. So Krishna also meditates on his own self every morning as a grihastha. Ram is performing yajnas to satisfy his own self. So people should follow them and worship them. Okay, following them does not mean for worshipping one's own self. Ram is worshipping himself. Krishna is worshipping himself. I will also worship myself. Ahangaro pasana. Not that way. You follow them and worship them. Right? Ahangaropasana is unauthorized worship of Mayavadis. 22nd verse.
Hotre tathat disham prachim Brahmane dakshinam prabhu Adhvaryave pratijim vam Uttaram Samagayata Saha.
Lord Ramchandra gave the entire east to the Hota priest and the entire south to the Brahma priest, the west to the Advaryu priest and the north to the Udgata priest, the reciter of the Samveda. In this way he donated his kingdom.
After the sacrifice he has to give some donations. Ne? He used the whole kingdom as a donation. Okay, everything that he has, he gives as donation. So what he was left with is a nose ring of Sita Devi. Right? Except nose ring of Sita Devi, he donates everything. Right? And all the Brahmanas accept it. And then what we will do with it? You only take. Okay? And they return it to him back. We just need your love. Okay? Which we already have. We don't need all this opulence. You only rule. Then Lord Ram, as a servant of all these Brahmanas, he accepts them back and then he rules. That is described in the first few verses.
Acharyaya dadosesham yavati bhustadantara manyamana idam krishnam brahmanor hati nishpruhaha.
Thereafter, thinking that because the Brahmanas have no material desires, they should possess the entire world, Lord Ramchandra delivered the land between the east, west, north and south to the Acharya.
Ityayam tadalankara vasobhyam avaseshitaha tatharajanyapi apivaidehi saumangala saumangalyavaseshita.
Thus giving everything in charity to the Brahmanas, Lord Ramchandra retained only his personal garments and ornaments. And similarly, the Queen Mother Sita was left with only her nose ring and nothing else.
Tetu Brahmanya Devasya Vatsalyam Vikshasam Stutam Prita Kilnadhyastasmai Pratyarpedam Bhavashire.
All the Brahmanas who were engaged in the various activities of the sacrifice were very pleased with Lord Ramchandra, who was greatly affectionate and favorable to the Brahmanas. Thus, with the melted hearts, they returned all the property received from him and spoke as follows.
So, Brahmanas received everything and now they are returning the property because Brahmanas are not greedy. So citizens in Ram's kingdom, Ramarajya, they were strictly following Varnashram Dharma. So Varnashram Dharma mein there are Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. So Brahmanas are there. These Brahmanas are endowed with the qualities of Samo, Damas, Tapas, Saucham, etc. Kshanti, Rajyam, Vaivacha. So because they have real Brahminical qualifications, they are not greedy. Because they are Brahmanas, they are not greedy. So they, although they received wealth, they have no attachment or they have no attraction to that wealth. They just returned it back. So Brahmanical character offers no scope for possessing land and ruling citizens. Patan patan, yajan yajan, dana pratigraha. So that's all he can do. He need not possess anything. Right? He can give knowledge in charity. He can accept charity for his own personal maintenance. That's all. But he need not possess so many things. So all the Brahmanas, one thing is Brahmanas did not refuse. When Ramchandra is giving, we don't want it. They didn't say. They accepted it and then they respectfully returned it back. So Brahmanas were so pleased with Ramachandra's affection towards them that their hearts melted. So your affection is sufficient. We don't want all these ornaments and lands, etc. So Ram, aside from being Supreme Personality of Godhead, was fully qualified as a Kshatriya and was exemplary in character. So now Varnashram is nicely following, right? Nicely being followed. So Brahmanas are following their nature and what they have to do. Kshatriyas also should follow. So Kshatriya is by default very charitable. So to exemplify that quality, Ram is so charitable. How charitable he is. He is giving everything. Except his wife's nose ring, he is giving everything that is there in his possession. That's how charitable it is. That's why Lord Ram is touchstone. Okay, if he has to exhibit the quality of being charitable, he will do it to such an extent that he will become a beggar in the street, but he can give everything, right, in charity. But out of affection, he receives everything back from the Brahmanas. Kshatriyas have the propensity to rule, but they are very liberal and charitable. Right? Yudhishthira Maharaj engaged Data Karana to take charge of distributing charity. So Kshatriya's duty is to give charity. And a Brahmana's duty is to accept charity, but no more than needed to maintain his body and soul together. So even in first canto, we see this Marutta. There is a king named Marutta. So he was performing a sacrifice. And then he gave so much charity to the Brahmanas. And Brahmanas in golden plates. So Brahmanas received them. What we will do with them? They kept in dustbins. Okay, golden plates, they throw it in dustbins. Then after the whole Kurukshetra war happened, Yudhishthira Maharaj wanted to do a sacrifice. And because of so much war, so much expenditure happened, not much wealth is there in the treasury to perform such Rajasvi sacrifice, etc. So then our Rajasvi, Ashwamedha. Then Krishna suggested that earlier one king named Marutta, he gave so much charity to the Brahmanas and all of them left that golden plates and everything, whatever they received in dustbins, you can go and collect. So then all the Arjuna, Bhima and other brothers, they went and collected that and he did sacrifice like that. Now let's see what Brahmanas are saying in the 6th verse. Apramattam nastvayakim no. Apratam nastvayakim nu Bhagavan Bhuvaneshwara Yennontar hridayam vishya Tamoham sisvarochisha.
You are the master of the entire universe. What have you not given to us? You have entered the core of our hearts and dissipated the darkness of our ignorance by your effulgence. This is the supreme gift. We do not need any material donation.
The supreme gift that you gave is you came into our hearts. You are in our hearts. Right? Our hearts are filled with affection for you. That is sufficient for us. We don't need any other material donations. So Vaishnava means there is no greed for material wealth. Right? Dhruva and Prahlad Maharaj, when they received the darshan of the Lord, they said, we don't need any other material benedictions. Right? You gave your darshan, that's a big thing for us. We don't need anything else. So one who becomes a devotee for some material profit is not a pure devotee. He may not be a pure devotee, but if he performs devotional service, he will become pure devotee. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaradhi. Although he has some material desires and performs devotional service, then he will be purified of those material contaminations by worshipping the Lord. So Brahmanas are always enlightened and directed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead within the heart. Sarvasya chaham hridayam nivishto. They are not greedy for material wealth. Vamandev also speaks so many verses, how one should be satisfied with whatever he needs. Otherwise, a person who has uncontrolled senses, he will not be satisfied with the opulence of even three worlds also. So aspiring to possess more and more for personal sense gratification is ignorance, is simply ignorance. And this ignorance is conspicuous by its absence in the heart of a Brahmana or a Vaishnava. Brahmana is not ignorant. What is ignorance? Trying to acquire more than necessary. Like that. Then all the Brahmanas glorify Lord Ram and offer obeisances in the 7th verse. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Ramaya Kuntha Medhase Uttama Shloka Dhuryaya Nyasta Dandarpita Angraye.
O Lord, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who have accepted the Brahmanas as your worshipable deity. Your knowledge and memory are never disturbed by anxiety. You are the chief of all famous persons within this world, and your lotus feet are worshipped by sages who are beyond the jurisdiction of punishment. O Lord Ramchandra, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto you.
Very beautiful glorification of Lord Ram. Namo Brahmanya Devaya. He is very... He accepts Brahmanas as his worshipable deities. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Ramaya Akuntha Medhase. So Ram is Akuntha Medhasa. His memory and knowledge are never disturbed. Right? His Medha is never disturbed. Akuntha Medhase. Then Uttama Shloka Dhuryaya. Uttama Shloka is one who is glorified in choicest poetry. And Lord Ram is best of all such glorious persons. Uttama Shloka Dhuryaya. Best of all Uttama Shlokas. Then Nyasta Dandarpita Angraye. Nyasta means great sages, like sannyasis, renunciants. So Nyasta Dandarpita Angraye. Lord's lotus feet are adored and worshipped by great sages who are Nyasta Danda, who are beyond the jurisdiction of punishment. Sadhus, they are beyond the jurisdiction of punishment, and their object of worship is Lord Ram's lotus feet. So that's how all the Brahmanas who received donations from Lord Ramchandra, they glorified him. Now, 8th and 9th verses.
Kadachilloka jignasur gudho ratriyam alakshitaham charan vacho srunodramo bharyam uddishya kaschachit.
Dev Goswami continued, once while Lord Ramchandra was walking at night incognito, hiding himself by the disguise to find out the people's opinion of himself, he heard a man speaking unfavorably about his wife Sita Devi.
So there some versions say that Lord Ram personally heard this, right, when he was going incognito in the middle of the night to understand the situation of his kingdom. And some say that, some versions say that he heard from his, spice, right? One of his spice, Bhadra. So he tells him. So Bhadra tells him that, okay, this is the talk of the town, of the city. So,
now, naham bibharmitvam dushtam asatim paraveshmagam strainohi bibhrayat sitam Ramo naham bhaje punah.
Speaking to his unchaste wife, the man said, "You go to another man's house, and therefore you are unchaste and polluted. I shall not maintain you anymore. A henpecked husband like Lord Ram may accept a wife like Sita, who went to another man's house, but I am not a henpecked like him, and therefore I shall not accept you again."
Iti lokad bahumukhad durāradhyāt asamvidah patyābhītena sātyakta prāpta prācetasa āśramam.
Sukadeva Goswami said, "Men with the poor fund of knowledge and a heinous character speak nonsensically. Fearing such rascals, Lord Ramchandra abandoned his wife Sita Devi, although she was pregnant. Thus, Sita Devi went to the ashram of Valmiki Muni."
So, this is the nature of these people. Right? They speak nonsensically. Prabhupada is using very heavy words in translating this verse. Iti lokad bahumukhad. Right? Bahumukhad means one can talk in many nonsensical ways. Right? And it's unavoidable in this material world. They have poor fund of knowledge. Asamvidaha. Right? Pratyabhitena satyaktva prapta prachetasashramam. So, prachetasa is referring to Valmiki Muni here. So, his ashram. So, Ram had sent Sita Devi to Valmiki's ashram because of the bad talk of some citizens. Then, 11th verse.
Antarvatyagate kale yamausa sushuve sutau kusholava iti khyatau tayos chakre kriya munihi.
When the time came, the pregnant mother Sita Devi gave birth to twin sons, later celebrated as Lava and Kush. The ritualistic ceremonies from their birth were performed by Valmiki Muni.
Okay. Mother Sita gave birth to Lava and Kusha in Valmiki's ashram. So that is about the descendants of Lord Ram. Ram's sons are Kusha and Lava. Now, 12th verse speaks about Lakshmana's sons. So Lakshmana had two sons named Angada and Chitraketu. Bharata also had two sons named Taksha and Pushkala. Then Shatrughna had two sons named Subahu and Srutasena. When Lord Bharata went to conquer all directions, he had to kill many millions of Gandharvas, who are generally pretenders. Taking all their wealth, he offered it to Lord Ramachandra. Shatrughna also killed a Rakshasa named Lavana, who was the son of Madhu Rakshasa. Right? Then, thus he established in the great forest known as Madhuvan, the town known as Mathura. So Shatrughna established in Mathura town. He went away from Ayodhya. Same Mathura. So, as we discussed, Shatrughna went there so that Bharat can get association of Lord Ram. So, 15th verse. Sita Devi. What are her emotions in separation from Lord Ram? Mano nikshipya tanayo Sita Bharta Vivashita Dhyayanti Rama Charano Vivaram Praviveshaha.
Being forsaken by her husband, Sita Devi entrusted her two sons to the care of Valmiki Muni. Then, meditating upon the lotus feet of Lord Ramchandra, she entered into the earth.
It was impossible for Sita Devi to bear separation from Lord Ramachandra. So she entered earth.
Tat shrutva bhagavan ramo rundhan apidhiya suchaha smaram stasya gunam stam stan nashaklo drodhum ishvaraha.
In the news of Mother Sita's entering the earth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was certainly aggrieved. Although he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, upon remembering the exalted qualities of Mother Sita, he could not check his grief in transcendental love.
So Lord Ram is in great grief after knowing that Sita Devi went into earth. Right? Grief and separation exist even in the absolute Supreme Personality of Godhead. But such feelings of separation in the spiritual world are transcendental and blissful. They are sign of tasya prema vyavasita svabhava. Right? Being under the influence of Ladini Shakti and being controlled by love, in material world such feelings of separation are only perverted reflection. So when such feelings of separation are experienced in this material world from our material relatives and family members, that is maya, perverted reflection. But when Supreme Lord like Rama and Krishna, when they experience separation, that is very transcendental, spiritually blissful. Right? You see, when Dhritarashtra and Gandhari and Vidura, they left Hastinapur. So Vidura comes to Hastinapur and then enlightens Dhritarashtra, and Dhritarashtra comes back to his senses, and then he goes to forest. Right? He goes towards Himalaya to perfect his life. And Gandhari follows. And Vidura, his job is over. He also leaves from Hastinapur. Then Yudhishthira Maharaj starts lamenting. I didn't take care of them properly. They were bereft of their sons. We killed all of their sons. But that's, they were all thinking about their sons. We didn't take care of them properly. So he was lamenting. Then Narada Muni comes. Narada Muni says, your lamentation is purely based on ignorance. And feelings of separation in this material world is only out of ignorance. Right? When a mortal feels separation from one of his family members, right, that is only because of ignorance of the actual situation of the soul. Like that. But when devotees feel separation from other devotees, then that is, there is Krishna element in that separation. So that is spiritual. So that, like, we lose inspiration from him. That's a different thing. Right? But otherwise, these feelings of separation are material, perverted reflection of spiritual feelings of separation, as Prabhupada explains. 17th verse. Stripum prasanga etadrik sarvatratrashamavaha apisvaranam kim uta gramyasya griha jetasaha.
The attraction between man and woman, or a male and female, always exists everywhere, making everyone always fearful. Such feelings are present even among the controllers like Brahma and Lord Shiva, and is the cause of fear for them. What to speak of others who are attracted to the household life in this material world?
So Prabhupada again repeats that statement. When feelings of love and transcendental bliss from the spiritual world are pervertedly reflected in this material world, they are certainly causes of bondage. So the feelings of separation between the devotees or between the Lord and his devotees are spiritual. And those same feelings of separation, similar feelings of separation amongst the materialistic men, they are cause of bondage only. So as long as a man feels attracted to woman in this material world and woman feels attracted to men, the bondage of repeated birth and death will continue. Such attraction towards each other and feeling of separation when they are separated from each other, they only create bondage. Right? Like that. Then 18th verse. Tata urdhvam brahmacharyam dharayan ajuhot prabhuhum trayodashabda sahasram agnihotram akhanditam.
After Mother Sita entered the earth, Lord Ramchandra observed complete celibacy and performed an uninterrupted Agnihotra Yajna for 13,000 years.
So Lord Ram was in celibacy, brahmacharya, okay, for the rest of his incarnation period. Trayodashabda Sahasram, 13,000 years he was regularly performing this Agnihotra Yajna. 19th verse. Smaratam hridi vinyasya
विद्धं विद्धं दण्डककण्टकैः स्वपादपल्लवं राम आत्मज्योतिरगात्ततः.
Completing the sacrifice, Lord Ramchandra, whose lotus feet were sometimes pierced by thorns when he lived in Dandakaranya, placed those lotus feet in the hearts of those who always think of him. Then he entered his abode, the Vaikuntha planet beyond the Brahma Jyoti.
Here, Smaratam Hriti Vinyasya Vidham Dandaka Kantakaihi. So, Lord's lotus feet, when he was in Vanvas, Lord's lotus feet are sometimes pierced by the Kantaka of Dandakaranya. So because he was not wearing chappal, because Bharat Maharaj took them away. Okay, his sandals are in Ayodhya and he was walking barefoot. And sometimes his feet were pierced by thorns. And Smaratam, just by remembering that Lord Ram's lotus feet were pierced by thorns, all his devotees will be, devotees are great in great anxiety. So Lord Ram's lotus feet are so soft and tender that they cannot even bear the touch of Mother Sita. Yesterday we have heard, right? The Mother Sita, Sita's hands, you see, like softer than lotus, right? Lotus petals. When they touch Lord Ram's feet, they become reddish or they cannot bear the touch. So such feet are walking barefoot, right? On the pathways or whatever, no pathways there, right? In the forests of Dandaka, Dandakaranya, Dandaka Kantakaihi. So such lotus feet, Lord Ram places those lotus feet in the hearts of his devotees and then he leaves. He entered into his own abode. So he ended his incarnation. So here, Prabhupada very nicely catches that point. He says, lotus feet are always a subject matter for meditation for devotees. Lord's lotus feet. In Dandakaranya, sometimes thorns pricked his lotus feet. The devotees, upon thinking them, would faint. Say, Lord actually does not feel any pain or pleasure from any action or reaction in this world. Right? One material thorn is pricking Lord's spiritual body. What pain he will get? Right, he is actually beyond all this. But thinking like that, all the Ayodhya Vasis and all the other devotees of Lord Ramachandra, they become anxious. Just like when Lord Krishna was going into the forests, to the pasturing grounds, so all the gopis and gopas who were staying back to do their household activities, so they were thinking, hey, Lord Krishna's feet would be hurt by thorns and pebbles in the forest. Right, in Govardhan, once Mother Yashoda made some shoes, your lotus feet will be pierced by thorns and pebbles, so you should wear shoes. Then Krishna says, I will wear this, no problem. But you should make shoes for all my 9 lakh cows also. Right, 9 lakh into 4. Right, 4 feet. Na? Each cow has 4 feet. Krishna had only 2 feet. So Yashoda Mai said, I can't do that. I'll work barefoot. So if my cows are not wearing chappal, how can I wear? Krishna says. So on that same night, all the cows of Vrindavan, they went and smashed all the stones and pebbles in Vrindavan. Now you go there, the dust is very soft. Interestingly, I was going for a tour in our Vrindavan forest. There also, dust is becoming very soft. You have noticed? It's very soft. Okay, the lotus feet of the Lord are always a subject matter for meditation, for devotees. So, attitude of gopis, Prabhupada also mentions here. Same thing in deity worship also. When somebody is tying turban or doing something, dressing the Lord, he should take care that the pins which we may use, they should not touch the body like that. Sometimes when Lord Ramachandra wandered in the forest of Dandakaranya, thorns pricked his lotus feet. Okay, now this tribulation in the devotee's heart cannot be understood by karmis, jnanis and yogis. Now Lord's lotus feet are pierced by thorns and devotees are becoming anxious and they are crying. Right? So they are feeling that pain. So jnanis and yogis and karmis, they cannot understand this.
you are devotees of Lord and you believe that Lord is all powerful, right? Okay, just for argument's sake, we'll accept your argument that Lord is all powerful, he is supreme personality of Godhead, etc. But if you accept so, why should you feel pain when his feet are pierced by thorns? Jnanis and yogis and karmis may question like this. But they can't understand this. Prabhupada says they cannot understand. This tribulation of devotee's heart, thinking that Lord's lotus feet would be pained, right? That they cannot understand. Actually, when Krishna was going back to Dwaraka, Yudhishthira Maharaj arranges so much army, so much of military army for his protection, Krishna's protection. So you are going from Hastinapur to Dwaraka, on the way some enemy kings may attack you, right? So you take all this, and then to see Krishna off, so Yudhishthira Maharaj travels for so many kilometers along with Krishna, right? I will come. I'll come till the, for example, one of the guests are going and then you will go till main gate. Na? So like that, Yudhishthira Maharaj also accompanied Krishna when he was going out of Hastinapur, not till the main gate of the palace, beyond that, for a long period. And Krishna said, you go back, I can take care of myself. So Krishna went. And still Yudhishthira Maharaj arranged so much army. This army will come with you till Dwaraka. So devotee is very much worried about Lord's protection. And who saved all the Pandavas in Kurukshetra war in many, various incidents? Krishna only. Why he needs protection? But it's beyond logic. You can't apply logic of jnanis there. Right? So the tribulation in devotee's heart cannot be understood by karmis, jnanis or yogis. The devotee who could not tolerate even thinking of Lord's lotus feet being pricked by a thorn were again put into tribulation. They could not bear that pain, but they were put into tribulation when Lord Ram ended his pastimes. He went back to his abode. So now they are again in separation. So separation of Lord's disappearance. For the Lord had to return to his abode after finishing his pastimes in the material world. And Brahma Jyoti is also mentioned. Yasya prabhava prabhavato jagadanda koti. Brahma Jyoti is nothing but Lord's effulgence. Right? Jnanis will go there and then they will come back. Prabhupada mentions all that. So 20th verse describes Lord Ramchandra's reputation and glory. Nedam yasho raghupate swarayacha yatta Leelatanor adhikasam yavimukta dhamna Rakshovadho jaladivandhanam astrapugaihi Kimtasya shatruhanane kapayasahayah.
Lord Ramchandra's reputation for having killed Ravana with showers of arrows at the request of the demigods and for having built a bridge over the ocean does not constitute a factual glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Ramchandra, whose spiritual body is always engaged in various pastimes. Lord Ramchandra has no equal or superior, and therefore he had no need to take help from the monkeys to gain victory over Ravana.
So it's not that Lord Ram is dependent on all the monkeys to kill Ravana. Right? It's a part of his pastimes. And like that, he is leaving subject matter for all of us to glorify him. That way. And he is asamordhva. No one is equal to him. No one is superior to him. And he is not obliged to do any activity also. Natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate. Prabhupada quotes that verse. Natasyamascha bhyadikasch drishyate. Parasya shaktir vidayavatu vidayava shruyate. No one can be Lord's enemy, since who could be more powerful than the Lord? When Lord wants to take pleasure in his pastimes, he comes down to material world and acts like human being and thus showing his wonderful, glorious activities to please his devotees. Next verse, 21. Yasyamalam rupasada suyasho dhunapi gayantya ghagnam rishayo digibhendra pattam Tamna kapala vasupala kirita jushta
पादाम्बुजं रघुपतिं शरणं प्रपद्ये.
Lord Ramchandra's spotless name and fame, which vanquish all sinful reaction, are celebrated in all the direction, like the ornamental cloth of various victorious elephant that conquers all the direction. Great saintly person like Markandeya Rishi still glorify his characteristic in the assemblies of the great emperor like Maharaja Yudhishthir. Similarly, all the saintly kings and all the demigods, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, worship the Lord by bowing down with their helmet. Let me offer my obeisances unto his lotus feet.
This is like concluding with a nice prayer. Sayaih sprishto bhidrishtova samvishto anugato piva koshalasye yayo sthanam yatra gacchanti yoginah.
Lord Ramchandra returned to his abode, to which bhakti yogis are promoted. This is the place to which all the inhabitants of Ayodhya went after they served the Lord in his manifest pastime by offering him obeisances, touching his lotus feet, fully observing him as the father-like king, sitting or lying down with him like equals, or even just accompanying him.
So Lord Ramchandra is very mercifully giving his personal association to many Ayodhya Vasis. Right? And all of them also are bhakti yogis. They are also promoted to the eternal abode of the Lord. So Prabhupada writes on, one goes to back to Godhead after leaving his body. Janma karma cha medivyam. Yantyaktva deham punarjanmana iti mama iti surjuna. So Ayodhyavasis who saw Lord Ram as citizens and served him as servants, sat and talked with him as friends, or were somehow or other present during his reign, went back to Godhead. So like that, all these Ayodhyavasis also went back to Godhead. After being trained to serve the Lord in various capacities in Prakrita Leela, devotee is finally promoted to Sanatana Dharma, Sanatana Dharma, spiritual world. Actually, once Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj was giving a presentation on the Maushala Leela, Krishna's disappearance pastimes. There, he mentioned a devotee performs his devotional activities, sadhana bhakti and all. And once he performs his practice nicely, then he may come into Raganuga stage. He follows in the footsteps of some devotees whose mood he wants to imbibe, right? Vatsalya or Dasya or Sakya, whatever. And then they will perform Raganuga Bhakti. And even such devotees also, they will take birth in Lord's Dham. Like they will become Vrajavasis. And they will be personally trained by the eternal associates of the Lord in the very finer nuances of serving the Lord. And then they will be promoted to the spiritual world. Like that. So taking birth in Lord's Dham is to get trained in the very finer details of Lord's service by his eternal associates, and that will give them entrance into the spiritual world. So one who enters the transcendental pastimes of the Lord is called Nitya Leela Pravishta. Then 23. This is the glory of hearing about Lord Ramchandra. This we have memorized. Purusho Rama Charitam Shravane Rupadharayan Andrisham Shaparo Rajan Karma Bandhair Vimuchyate.
O King Parikshit, anyone who orally received the narrations concerning the characteristics of Lord Ramchandra's pastime will ultimately be freed from the disease of envy and thus be liberated from the bondage of fruitive activities.
So, by hearing Lord Ramchandra's pastimes nicely, one will be freed from this disease of envy. Andrishamsha paro rajan. Then, karma bandher vimuchyate. He will be freed from the material bondage also. Prabhupada writes about envy in this whole purport. Very nice purport.
In the material world, everyone is envious of someone else. Even in religious life, very dangerous. Even in religious life, sometimes if one devotee has advanced in spiritual activities, other devotees are envious of him. Such envious devotees are not completely freed from the bondage of birth and death. So this kind of envy can creep in into the devotional circles also. Right, seeing the advancement of another devotee. You see, the Celebrating Other Success seminar, one major section deals with envy. When other devotee is getting more attention in by spiritual master, or he's getting more positions or more privileged services in the temple. So one, others, if they are neophytes or like not very matured, they may feel envious towards that person. But actual, a person, a devotee, if he is in good standing in devotional service, he will have genuine taste for hearing and chanting, right? He will have dedication and enthusiasm for service. So these are the actual parameters of success. But sometimes neophytes may measure success in terms of his external positions, right? So, and create envy. Like that. As long as one is not completely freed from envy, one cannot be freed from bondage of birth and death. And as long as one is not completely freed from bondage of birth and death, one cannot enter the Sanatana Dham or the eternal pastimes of the Lord. So the whole cause of envy is bodily conception, right? Or scarcity mentality. So bodily conception, Prabhupada writes here, one becomes envious because of being influenced by the designations of the body. But the liberated devotee has nothing to do with the body. And therefore, he is completely on the transcendental platform. Even in third canto, 15th chapter, we are starting in the morning Bhagavatam classes. So the series of verses show that envy is not at all present in the spiritual world. Vaikuntha. Paravatanya dhrita sarasa chakravaka datyuha hamsa sukaditri varhinamva. Kolahalo viramate chiramatramuchair bhrungadipe harikatham ivagayamane. When the bhrunga, when the bumblebee is making some sound that is resembling Krishna katha, all the sweet singing birds, they maintain a low profile and they stop singing and they encourage this bumblebee to sing. And all the beautiful flowers which are very colorful and fragrant, they maintain a low profile to allow Tulsi Maharani, Tulsi to serve Krishna more. So there is absolutely no envy in the spiritual world. So even amongst the plants, even amongst the birds, even amongst the animals in the spiritual world, there is no envy. What to speak of human beings who have such high grade consciousness. So if one has envy, there is no entry into the spiritual world. Like that. So cause of envy is bodily conception. Okay, a devotee is never envious of anyone. In one purport, Prabhupada writes, Vaikuntha thinking or Vaishnava thinking. We have taken that in seminar also. The seventh canto. Seventh canto, correct, correct. Someone can take out that purport. Vaikuntha thinking and Vaishnava thinking means every devotee should get an opportunity to serve the Lord according to the best of his capacity. Right? No one will be deprived of service. And if some devotee is excelling in his service, other devotees will be happy and inspired, take inspiration from that service and encourage him in that service. Like that. And they will take inspiration from him in doing that service and they themselves will improve that service. This kind of competition may be there. Transcendental competition may be there, but it is devoid of envy. That competition amongst the devotees who are Vaishnavas, that is only to increase their quality of service to the Lord, not to defame or undermine others. Right? So this is about envy. But solution to envy is what? Appreciation. And what? Hearing Lord Ram's pastimes. Hearing Lord Ram's pastimes is the solution to envy, disease of envy. And Rishamsa Paro Rajan. Depreciation is definitely another solution, which we had in morning class. Sri Rajovacha Katham sa Bhagavan Ramo Bhratrunva Svayamatmanaha Tasmin Vate Navartanta Prajah Paurascha Ishvare.
Maharaj Parikshit inquired from Sukhdev Goswami, how did the Lord conduct himself and how did he behave in relationship with his brothers? Who were expansion of his own self and how did his brother and inhabitants of Ayodhya treat him?
So after Sukadeva Goswami completed the narration of Lord Ramchandra's pastimes in brief and gave the Phalastuti also, Parikshit Maharaj inquired him with some more questions. How did the Lord conduct himself? What was his relationship with the citizens and brothers, etc.? So, one by one, Sukadeva Goswami answers all these questions. Athadishad digvijaye Bhratrum Stribhuvaneshwaraha Atmanam Darshayan Svanam Purim Aikshatasanugaha.
Sukhdev Goswami replied, after accepting the throne of the government by the fervent request of his younger brother Bharata, Lord Ramchandra ordered his younger brother to go out and conquer the entire world. While he personally remained in the capital to give audience to all the citizens and residents of the palace and supervise the governmental affair with his other assistants.
After Lord Ram became the king, what he was doing is, he is ordering his brothers, you go out and conquer other kingdoms. So when an emperor is there, he has to conquer and subdue other kings. All the other kings should be subordinate to this emperor. Right? It's an act of kshatriyas. So king can send his brothers or ministers or some of his representatives to go and conquer. Right? So to achieve victory all over the world. So he had sent his brothers outside to conquer the world and he himself stayed personally in the kingdom to do what? To give personal audience and personal association to all the citizens of Ayodhya. Now Prabhupada brings out very nice lessons from this. So Lord Ram is personally sitting, right? He was not going out to conquer, but he is sending his brothers to conquer, right? And he was not, he was staying in the kingdom only. Now, why brothers were chosen, why brothers were made bereft of Lord Ram's association, while that association is given to some Ayodhya Vasis? Brothers did not get personal association of Lord Ram, but Ayodhya Vasis got. So there is a nice preaching, kind of perspective here. A guru may send some of his disciples, you go out and preach. You don't stay in the temple. You go out and preach and spread the movement. And to some younger devotees, they are allowed to stay in the temple. They can take care of services within the temple only. Right? And take the personal association of Guru. Right? That is Kanishtas and more than Kanishtas. Okay, Uttamas or Madhyamas, they will go out and preach. But Kanishtas, they need personal association of a spiritual master. But Uttamas, they can go out and preach. So that is one thing. So here, citizens cannot go out and conquer the other kingdoms. So citizens need personal association of Lord Ram. But brothers can go out and conquer. They have to go out. Sacrificing their personal association with Lord Ram, they can go out. So Prabhupada says that Lord doesn't allow his devotees to do sense gratification. So for the brothers of Lord Ramchandra, their sense gratification is his personal association. You don't do sense gratification by being next to me. You serve me by going out and then conquering the whole world. Right? But I will give my personal association to Ayodhya Vasis because they can't do this activity. Like that.
So
So manager is not insecure. He empowers others also to achieve many things. They will be the conquerors. So he will stay. He need not personally go out. So these are some lessons from Lord Ram's activity there.
Asikta margam gandhodaihi karinam madasikaraihi swami swaminam praptam alokya mattam va suratam viva sutaram viva.
During the reign of Lord Ramchandra, the streets of the capital Ayodhya were sprinkled with the perfumed water and drops of perfumed liquor thrown about by the elephant from their trunks. When the citizens saw the Lord personally supervising the affair of the city in such opulence, they appreciated this opulence very much.
So this is the opulence. What is the opulence? Even the courtyards or the land in front of the house, they are also being sprinkled by not just simple scented water. They are sprinkled by drops of perfumed liquor. Right? It is a practice in the rural India that in villages they mix cow dung in water and then they sprinkle in front of the house. Right? So now they are sprinkling this perfumed water. They don't need sprinkling machines. Okay, elephant has the ability to suck water and then sprinkle. Right? They have so many elephants. Okay, this is opulence. Okay, next. The palaces, the palace gates, the assembly houses, the platforms for meeting places, the temples, and all such places were decorated with golden water pots and bedecked with various types of flags. Wherever Ramchandra visited, auspicious welcome gates were constructed with banana trees and betel nut trees full of flowers and fruits. The gates were decorated with various flags made of colorful cloth and with tapestries, then mirrors and garlands. Even when Krishna was entering Dwaraka, all the homes were also decorated like that. And Prabhupada mentions, every home was prepared to welcome the Lord and worship the Lord. So every day, in every household in Dwaraka or Ayodhya, there were arrangements made for the worship of the Lord. As soon as Lord enters, they need not, you know, search. The guest department has to be called, and then they have to get the plate, glass. They have to borrow glass from one brahmachari, and then he's not giving her. So, that doesn't happen. Every house by default is prepared to receive Supreme Lord, prepared for the worship of the Lord. Like that. Wherever Lord Ramchandra visited, the people approached him with the paraphernalia of worship and begged the Lord's blessings. O Lord, as you rescued the earth from the bottom of the sea in your incarnation as a boar, may you now maintain it. Thus, we beg your blessings. Thereafter, not having seen the Lord for a long time, the citizens, both men and women, being very eager to see him, left their homes and got up on the roofs of the palaces. Being incompletely satiated with seeing the face of Lord Lotus-eyed Lord Ramachandra, they showered flowers upon him. Same thing happens with Krishna also. Lot of parallels between Ram and Krishna, you see. Nityam nirikshamananam yadyapi dvarakaukasam nanitrupyanti hidrushaha shriyodhamangamachyutam. All the Dwarakavasis, nityam nirikshamananam, they are constantly, regularly seeing Lord Krishna's beauty. Yadyapi dvarakaukasam navitrupyanti hidrushaha. By that vision, they are not satiated at all. Why? Shriyodhamangamachyutam. Lord's body is the abode of all beauties. Shriyodhama. Angam, Achyutam. Achyutas, Anga are the dham of Shriyas. So many opulences, so many beauties. That's why they are never satiated. Something similar is happening with Lord Ramchandra also here. And all the ladies will go on the rooftop and then shower flowers, pushyabhishek every day. Whenever Lord goes out, pushyabhishek. Like that, on the streets, not within one room.
Then, thereafter, Lord Ramchandra entered the palace of his forefathers. Within the palace were various treasures, and valuable wardrobes. The sitting places on the two sides of the entrance door were made of coral. The yards were surrounded by pillars and vaidhurya mani. The floor was made of highly polished marakata mani, and the foundation was made of marble. The entire palace was decorated with flags and garlands and bedecked with valuable stones, shining with celestial effulgence. The palace was fully decorated with pearls and surrounded by lamps and incense. The men and women within the palace all resembled demigods and were decorated with various ornaments which seemed beautiful because of being placed on their bodies. Okay, ornaments are beautiful because of being adorned by all the associates of Lord Ram. So Ramachandra, chief of the best of learned scholars, resided in that place with his pleasure potency mother Sita and enjoyed complete peace. Without transgressing the religious principles, Lord Ramachandra, whose lotus feet are worshipped by devotees in meditation, enjoyed with all the paraphernalia of transcendental pleasure as long as needed, 13,000 years. Then he ended his pastimes as Ramachandra. Now, four fathers means like that palace is coming in hereditary, right? Hereditary. So Ikshvaku dynasty is holding that palace, Ayodhya. His predecessors. After coming back from his vanavas, he was made king, right? This Hare Krishna. Prabhu, could you please speak a few words, Prabhu, about Lord Ram?
Is my voice clear, Prabhu?
Yes, Prabhu, it's very clear, Prabhu.
I could not catch all of it today. As the beginning part, I missed a part of it, so I'll speak few words for it, little bit. In this chapter of Lord Ramachandra ruling the world, in the first part, the 9, 11, 4, and of course 5 and 6 also, we read about how Lord Rama and Sita were ruling as a king and queen, and how they were extremely charitable towards Brahmanas, considering the Brahmanas to be free from all material desire, is handing over all the east, south, west, north, all the directions. And the Sita was left only with the nose ring, and Rama was left only with his dress and ornament. So, on one hand, there is a mention about how Lord Rama, as an ideal Kshatriya king, is charitable. He is extremely charitable. But on the other hand, as the Supreme Lord Ramachandra, he is also very affectionate to the Brahmanas. And considering that his devotees don't feel any attraction for the material desires, Lord Rama felt very inspired to hand over everything to him, to them. But in the Varnashrama, the duties of Ramana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra are so rigid, and there is a kind of Lakshman Rekha that is put for everyone, what they can possess and what they can not possess, and what things they can have control over and what things they have no control over. All these things are very well laid out. So the Brahmanas are accepting it, and they are giving it back to King Ramachandra, so that he only can, you know, keep the land and everything and rule over them. So that is a very amazing section of this chapter about how the Kshatriya king has no fear to hand over everything to the Brahmanas, and he takes guidance from the Brahmanas to rule the kingdom. And the Brahmanas are unattached, they are completely detached, and they are giving it all back to the king, and they are simply happy chanting their Vedic hymns and accepting a little charity for their survival. Yeah. And some section of the chapter I was having trouble hearing because I was traveling. At the beginning I heard some part of it and some portion of the chapter I missed. So you can continue with that, Dharma Krishna Prabhu. There is a field some point later I will add.
Okay, thank you. After Lord Ram returned from Vanvas, so he was staying in the palace of the forefathers, which he inherited from the Ikshvaku dynasty. So he was staying peacefully there till that Dhobiwala said something, and then Sita had to be banished. So this is like description of Ram Rajya only. Now we'll enter the 12th chapter. So, Makanlal Prabhu, you can read the translations. So, this is a description of the dynasty of Lord Ramachandra, dynasty of Kusha, one of his sons. So, all the series of names only.
Sugriva Goswami said, the son of Ramachandra was Kusha, and the son of Kusha was Atithi. The son of Atithi was Nishadha, and the son of Nishadha was Nabha. The son of Nabha was Pundarika, and from Pundarika came a son named Shemadhanva. The son of Shemadhanva was Devanika. Devanika's son was Aniha. Aniha's son was Pariyatra, and Pariyatra's son was Balastala. The son of Balastala was Vajranabha, who was said to have been born from the effulgence of the sun god. The son of Vajranabha was Sagana, and his son was Vidruti. The son of Vidruti was Hiranyanabha, who became a disciple of Jaimini and became a great acharya of mystic yoga. It is from Hiranyanabha that the great saint Yajnavalkya learned the highly elevated system of mystic yoga known as Adhyatma Yoga, which can loosen the knots of material attachment in the heart. The son of Hiranyanabha was Pushpa, and the son of Pushpa was Dhruvasandhi. The son of Dhruvasandhi was Sudarshan, whose son was Agnivarna. The son of Agnivarna was named Shigra, and his son was Maru. Having achieved perfection in the power of mystic yoga, Maru still lives in a place known as Kalapa Grama. At the end of Kali Yuga, he will revive the lost Surya dynasty by begetting a son.
Maru, he will revive the Surya dynasty at the end of Kali Yuga after 432,000 years. So by Yoga Siddhi, one can live in this material body, mortal body, for such a long time. Right? This is the perfection of Yoga Siddhi. So Prabhupada mildly criticizes the modern yoga practice also. If you are a real yogi, you should be able to live also. Like that. Okay, so he could live. Yes.
From Maru was born a son named Prashushruta. From Prashushruta came Sandhi. From Sandhi came Amarsana, and from Amarsana a son named Marswan. From Marswan, Vishwabahu took his birth. From Vishwabahu came a son named Prasenajit. From Prasenajit came Takshaka, and from Takshaka came Brahadbala, who was killed in a fight by your father. All these kings in the dynasty of Ikshvaku have passed away. Now please listen as I describe the kings who will be born in the future.
Here, till Parikshit Maharaj's age, these many kings were there. After Parikshit also, there were few kings in the Sand dynasty. Yes.
All these kings in the dynasty of Ikshvaku have passed away. Now please listen as I describe the kings who will be born in the future. From Bhradbala will come Bhradrana. The son of Bhradrana will be Urukriya, who will have a son named Vatsvarada. Vatsvarada will have a son named Prativyoma, and Prativyoma will have a son named Banu, from whom Divaka, a great commander of soldiers, will take birth. Thereafter, from Divaka will come a son named Sahadev, and from Sahadev a great hero named Bhadrashva. From Bhadrashva will come Bhanuman, and from Bhanuman will come Pratikashva. The son of Pratikashva will be Supratika. Thereafter, from Supratika will come Marudeva. From Marudeva, Sunasatra. From Sunaksatra, Pushkara. And from Pushkara, Antariksha. The son of Antariksha will be Sutapa, and his son will be Amitrajit. From Amitrajit will come a son named Bhradraja. From Bhradraja will come Barhi, and from Barhi will come Kritanjaya. The son of Kritanjaya will be known as Rananjaya, and from him will come a son named Sanjaya. From Sanjaya will come Sakya, from Sakya will come Shudhoda, and from Shudhoda will come Langala. From Langala will come Prasenjit, and from Prasenjit, Shudraka. From Shudraka will come Ranaka, and from Ranaka will come Suratha, and from Suratha will come Sumitra, ending the dynasty. This is a description of the dynasty of Brihadbala. The last king in the dynasty of Ikshvaku will be Sumitra. After Sumitra, there will be no more sons in the dynasty of the sun god, and thus the dynasty will end.
So sun dynasty will end there, but at the end of Kali Yuga, this Maru will again revive it. So that is about the dynasty of Ikshvaku, right, till Sumitra. Now Ikshvaku had another son. His name is Nimi, right? His Nimi's son is Janaka, father of Sita Devi. So that line now Sukadeva Goswami is describing in the 13th chapter. So after beginning sacrifices, Maharaj Nimi, the son of Ikshvaku, requested the great sage Vasishtha to take the post of chief priest. At the time, Vasishtha replied, "My dear Maharaj Nimi, I have already accepted the same post in a sacrifice begun by Indra." So here Sukadeva Goswami is describing the descendants from Nimi, one of the sons of Ikshvaku. And Nimi's story is little more elaborated. So Nimi wanted to do a sacrifice. And in his sacrifice, he requested Vasishtha to be a priest. But Vasishtha has accepted priesthood from another sacrifice which is conducted by Indra. So Vasishtha told him, "I will do that sacrifice and I will come back and do your sacrifice. You wait till that time." So Vasishtha was actually desirous of the remuneration that he gets from that sacrifice and this sacrifice also. So Vasishtha went there asking him to wait. But Nimi thought, "Why should I wait? Okay, I will not wait. Time is very precious. I will conduct the sacrifice with another priest." So Nimi employed another priest and completed the sacrifice. So Vasishtha completed that sacrifice of Indra and then he came back to Nimi. And by the time he saw that he has already done the sacrifice. "You have done the sacrifice, I told you to wait." Then Nimi said, "Time is valuable, that's why I just did. So I curse you." Vasishtha said, "I curse you, Nimi, so that your material body will fall off. You will lose your body. Basically, you will die." Then Nimi also cursed Vasishtha. "Your body also will fall off." So his body also fell off. But Vasishtha, he took birth again through the medium of Urvasi. Once Urvasi, this heavenly damsel, was there when she was going here and there. Then Mitra and Varuna, they saw Urvasi. And they release semen, right? Through that semen, the combined semen of Mitra and Varuna, Vasishtha takes birth again. So that's how Vasishtha was reborn. But Nimi's body, after it fell off, so Nimi's body was preserved in some chemicals, okay, by some of the associates. So then all the associates prayed to the priests, right? Priests of Nimi's sacrifice, they prayed to the demigods, "Please revive Nimi's body. It fell off because of Vasishtha's curse." Then demigods were ready to revive, but Nimi said, "I will not accept material body again. Okay, I don't want any more material body." He left and he was totally absorbed in devotional service. That is the story of Nimi. Yes, Prabhu, please read from second verse.
"I shall return here after finishing the yajna for Indra. Kindly wait for me until then. Maharaj Nimi remained silent and Vasishtha began to perform the sacrifice of Lord Indra. Maharaj Nimi, being a self-realized soul, considered that this life is flickering. Therefore, instead of waiting long for Vasishtha, he began performing the sacrifice with other priests. After completing the sacrificial performance for King Indra, the spiritual master Vasishtha returned and found that his disciple Maharaj Nimi had disobeyed his instructions. Thus Vasishtha cursed him, saying, "May the material body of Nimi, who considers himself learned, immediately fall." For unnecessarily cursing him when he had committed no offense.
Here Prabhupada makes a comment that a Brahmana should not be greedy at all. So as we discussed, Vasishtha was little desirous of the remuneration from Nimi also and Indra also. That's why he was asking Nimi to wait. But after he came back, when Nimi did the sacrifice, Vasishtha cursed him also unnecessarily. When we are anticipating for some result, what is that verse? Dhyayato vishayan bhumsan sangaste shobhajayate sangat sanjayate kama kaman krodho bijayate. If one's desire is not fulfilled, he will be a victim of anger. So Vasishtha's desire for the remuneration from Nimi was not fulfilled, so he became influenced by anger and then he cursed. Right? Although it was not necessary to curse the king. Right? That Prabhupada mentions here. And why Nimi was not waiting at all to do the sacrifice. So that Prabhupada mentions in the third purport. He quotes Chanika Pandit. Shariram kshana vidvamsi kalpantasthayino gunah. The duration of one's life in the material world may end at any moment. But if within this life one does something worthy, that qualification is depicted in history eternally. So one has to very diligently use the duration of one's life. One should not unnecessarily waste time. So that's why Nimi said, "I will not wait for so long for a priest. I will employ another priest and do the sacrifice." Okay. Yes, Prabhuji.
For unnecessarily cursing him when he had committed no offense, Maharaj Nimi counter-cursed his spiritual master. For the sake of getting contributions from the King of Heaven, he said, "You have lost your religious intelligence. Therefore, I pronounce this curse. Your body will also fall." After saying this, Maharaj Nimi, who was expert in the science of spiritual knowledge, gave up his body. Vasishtha, the great-grandfather, gave up his body also. But through the semen discharged by Mitra and Varuna, when they saw Urvashi, he was born again. During the performance of Yajna, the body relinquished by Maharaj Nimi was preserved in fragrant substances. And at the end of the Satra Yaga, the great saints and brahmanas made the following request to all the demigods assembled there. "If you are satisfied with this sacrifice, and if you are actually able to do so, kindly bring Maharaj Nimi back to life in this body." The demigods said yes to this request by the sages, but Maharaj Nimi said, "Please do not imprison me again in a material body."
Sometimes demigods also have the power to revive human beings. Right? Although the great sages were also powerful brahmanas, they requested the demigods to revive Nimi's body, which had been preserved in various perfumed balms. One should not think that demigods are powerful only in enjoying senses. They are also powerful in such deeds as bringing life back to a dead body. There are many such instances in Vedic literature. So Satyavrata, Satyavan and Savitri. So Yamaraj was taking Satyavan to Yamalok, and Savitri was behind him. She was following till Yamalok also. Because of her chastity, she could follow Yamaraj till Yamalok. Then she said, Yamaraj was telling, "You go back home. Why are you unnecessarily following me? Let me do my duty." So his life is over, I am taking him back. Then she was not listening at all. Then finally Yamaraj said, "You go back, I will give you whatever benediction you want." Then she says, "I want a son." Then Yamaraj says, "Tathastu." And then he was about to go back. Then Savitri says, "Give my husband back." "I gave you benediction, go. Why are you asking husband again?" Then she said, "I am a chaste woman. You blessed me to have a son. How will I have a son if my husband is with you? You release my husband." Then, she's an intelligent lady, and Yamaraj gives Satyavan back. Prabhupada narrates this story in some lectures also. Yes, Prabhu, continue.
Maharaj Nimi continued, Mayavadis generally want freedom from accepting a material body because they fear having to give it up again. But devotees whose intelligence is always filled with the service of the Lord are unafraid. Indeed, they take advantage of the body to render transcendental loving service.
So, Maharaj Nimi did not want to accept body, material body. Prabhupada says it may seem that Mayavadis also don't want to accept material body out of fear of having it, giving it up again. But Nimi is not like that. Nimi did not want a material body in the Mayavadic sense. But Maharaj Nimi did not want a material body which would be cause of bondage. Because he was a devotee, he wanted a body by which he could render devotional service. Right? Then, Nathanam Najanam Nasundarim, Prabhupada quotes that. Then by saying life after life, Lord referred not to an ordinary birth, but a birth in which to remember the lotus feet of the Lord. So Mahaprabhu is praying, Mama Janmani Janmanishware, Bhavatad Bhakti Rahaitu Kitvai. I don't want liberation from the bondage of birth and repeated birth and death. I don't want that. I don't mind taking birth again and again. But give me that body which is favorable for your remembrance. Mama Janmani Janmanishware, I don't mind that. But Bhavatad Bhaktir Ahaitu Kitvai. I should be able to do bhakti in that body. Like that. Devotees are focused on that. If one has a strong desire to serve the Lord, even if he accepts a material body, there is no cause of anxiety. Since a devotee, even in a material body, is a liberated soul. But Nimi was being extra careful here. I don't want to accept material body because it might cause bondage for me. The desire to serve the Lord establishes one as a liberated in any condition of life, whether in spiritual body or material body. So, whichever body one may be, whichever life one may be, one should have a desire to serve the Lord. That is more important than coming out of this transmigration or accepting or rejecting material bodies. That is how Prabhupada explains in the purport. Next, Prabhu, please read.
I do not wish to accept a material body, for such a body is the source of all distress, lamentation and fear. Everywhere in the universe, just as it is for a fish in the water, which lives always in anxiety because of fear of death.
So this material body induces fear of death in everyone. So once you enter a material body, one will develop an attachment to that body. One will develop an identification with that body. Unless he is Bharat Maharaj or someone else. Right? So devotee, it's okay for a devotee to have a healthy fear not to enter another material body. So the material body, whether in higher planetary systems or lower planetary systems, is destined to die. So Prabhupada elaborates on that, the temporariness of this material body and the fear that is induced in the living being because of having a material body. So Prabhupada nicely elaborates on that. And he also quotes how one living entity is a sustenance of another living entity. Here, Nimi was saying, just as it is for a fish in the water, which lives always in anxiety because of fear of death, why a fish should have anxiety in the water always? Because a bigger fish can come and capture. Okay, a timingala fish will come and eat a small fish for its meal, lunch, dinner, whatever. I don't know whether they have three meals in the water or they eat whenever they want. But there is a fear of death wherever you are. Because that is the nature of this material world. Ahastani sahastanam, apadani chatushpadam, phalguni tatra mahatam, jivo jivasya jivanam. Right? One living entity is the food for another living entity. So that is the nature of this material world. So why unnecessarily worry? That's what this verse is quoted by Narada Muni when he was speaking to Yudhishthira Maharaj. Yudhishthira Maharaj was lamenting for Dhritarashtra's departure. So at one point Yudhishthira Maharaj was giving an argument. How will they sustain themselves? They are in forest. Who will feed them? Who will give them food? Then Narada Muni quotes this verse. He says, by nature's arrangement, one living entity is the food of another living entity. Dhritarashtra will depend on some vegetables, fruits and roots in the forest only, and he will sustain himself. You don't worry and try to get them back. That's what Narada Muni says there. So now Nimi, out of fear of bondage and other distresses, lamentation, fear, that are free. Right? Once you buy a product, they sometimes give some free items, right? Similarly, once you take a material body, this distress, lamentation, kleshas, all these are byproducts of that material body. So Nimi did not want to accept that. So now Devas, demigods are responding.
The demigod said, "Let Maharaj Nimi live without a material body. Let him live in a spiritual body as a personal associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and according to his desire, let him be manifest or unmanifest to common materially embodied people."
Yes, go ahead.
"Thereafter, to save the people from the danger of an unregulated government, the sages churned Maharaj Nimi's material body, from which, as a result, a son was born. Because he was born in an unusual way, the son was called Janak. And because he was born from the dead body of his father, he was known as Vaideha. Because he was born from the churning of his father's material body, he was known as Mithila. And because he constructed a city as King Mithila, the city was called Mithila."
So this is the glories of Janaka Maharaj. So demigod said, "Oh, Nimi is not wanting a material body. Okay, let him live in a spiritual body." Right? So they left him. They approved his decision. But now there is no king. If Nimi leaves, who will be the king? And he didn't have a son also till now. So all the sages churned the body of Nimi. The way sages churned the body of Vena and produced Prithu. Here Janaka was born. Okay, and his various names are also mentioned, Vaideha. So because Janaka Maharaj had these names, Janaka, Vaideha, Mithila, Sita Devi also had these three names, Janaki, Vaidehi, then Maithili. They are all different names of Sita Devi in connection with father. Yes, Prabhu, continue.
"O King Parikshit, from Mithila came a son named Udavasu. And from Udavasu, Nandivardhan, from Nandivardhan, Suketu, and from Suketu, Devarat. From Devarat came a son named Brihadratha, and from Brihadratha, a son named Mahavirya, and who became the father of Sudrati. The son of Sudrati was known as Drishtaketu, and from Drishtaketu came Haryashva. From Haryashva came a son named Maru. The son of Maru was Pratipaka, and from the son of Pratipaka was Kritartha. From Kritartha came Devamida. From Devamida, Vishruta, and from Vishruta, Mahadrati. From Mahadrati was born a son named Kritirat. From Kritirat was born Maharoma. From Maharoma came a son named Swarnaroma, and from Swarnaroma came Rashvaroma. From Rashvaroma came a son named Shiradvaja, also called Janak. When Shiradvaja was plowing a field, from the front of his plow, Shira, appeared a daughter named Sita Devi, who later became the wife of Lord Ramchandra. Thus he was known as Shiradvaja."
This Janaka, which we mentioned earlier, he was not the father of Sita Devi. This Janaka, the second Janaka. So he was, yeah.
"The son of Shiradvaja was Kushadvaja, and the son of Kushadvaja was King Dharmadvaja, who had two sons, namely Kritadvaja and Mitadvaja. O Maharaj Parikshit, the son of Kritadvaja was Keshidvaja, and the son of Mitadvaja was Kandikya. The son of Kritadvaja was expert in spiritual knowledge, and the son of Mitadvaja was expert in Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. Kandikya fled in fear of Keshidvaja. The son of Keshidvaja was Bhanuman, and the son of Bhanuman was Satadyumna. The son of Satadyumna was named Suchi. From Suchi, Sanadvaja was born, and from Sanadvaja came a son named Urjaketu. The son of Urjaketu was Aja, and the son of Aja was Purujit. The son of Purujit was Arishtanemi, and his son was Shutayu. From Shrutayu begot a son named Suparkshvaka, and Suparkshvaka begot Chitrarata. The son of Chitrarata was Shemadi, who became the king of Mithila. The son of Shemadi was Samaratha, and his son was Satyaratha. The son of Satyaratha was Upaguru, and the son of Upaguru was Upagupta, a partial expansion of fire god. The son of Upagupta was Vashvananta. The son of Vashvananta was Yuyudha. The son of Yuyudha was Subhashana, and the son of Subhashana was Shruta. The son of Shruta was Jaya, and from whom there came Vijaya. The son of Vijaya was Rata. The son of Rata was Shaunaka. The son of Shaunaka was Vithyavya. The son of Vithyavya was Dhriti. The son of Dhriti was Bahulashva. The son of Bahulashva was Kriti, and his son was Mahavashi. Sukadeva Goswami said, "My dear King Parikshit, all the kings of dynasty of Mithila were completely in knowledge of their spiritual identity. Therefore, even though staying at home, they were liberated from the duality of material existence."
So all these great kings of Mithila, they are very detached, right? They are liberated from the duality of material existence. So Prabhupada elaborates on the duality. In this material world, there is happiness, distress, they are all dualities. But they are all manodharma. Dvitiye bhadra bhadra jnana sabha manodharma. Ei vala ei manda, sei sabha brahma. These are all illusion. So one is freed from that happiness and distress. How? By tolerating that happiness and distress, dualities. Matras parshastu kaunteya sitoshna sukhadukkada. Agama apayino anitya. Tam stitikshasva bharata. Right? So, that is about the kings of Mithila. Sorry, I was confused with this Janaka and that Janaka. So, but still, this Janaka, because of his activities, his kingdom is named Videha and Mithila. So, all these are kings of Mithila only. So, Janaka is our... Sita Devi's names remain the same. Vaidehi and... That not because of that king, but because of the another Janaka, who is Shiradhvaja. Okay. Thank you all very much. Granthas Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. It's cut or what? Check. I can't hear, bro. Okay.
In this chapter of the 13th chapter, till now today, this has two interesting things. One is this attachment to remuneration shock. Actually, it was a
how do I do? Okay. Yes, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Can I speak now, Prabhu?
Yes, Prabhu. You can speak. It's clear now.
Yeah. Here in verse number 2 in the 13th chapter, we find that Vasishtha's material attachment is being shown here. Dr. Shukracharya had attachment to his own remuneration and gave a wrong advice to Bali Maharaj. In the same manner, Vasishtha wants to have the chief priest post both with Lord Indra in heaven and also with Maharaj Nimi here in both the places. So he's trying to put two legs in two boats, wanting both the things due to his attachment. And this clearly shows that Nimi Maharaj is put in a very dharma sankat situation. That is why he is saying here, Maharaj Nimi remains silent. He didn't say yes or no to Vasishtha. This is very similar to the the Tirupati barbers. They try to shave a dozen people sometimes. And hold many people under their custody. But they earn a lot of money in a very short time. So this greed for holding on to the priest position, that weakness is being shown here by Vasishtha. At the same time, Maharaj Nami, considering life is short, life is temporary, and the sacrifice to be performed for the pleasure of the Lord and welfare of the Praja, for everyone. And for one man's attachment, the sacrifice cannot wait. So he is going ahead with the sacrifice with other priests. Actually, these kind of things are very, very common in our material world. Sometimes people fix a brahmachari teacher for a particular program, and brahmachari teacher agrees that I will come. And then he gets another bigger opportunity for preaching in another place, where millionaires are calling. So sometimes then he is in a dilemma what to do. Then either he has to change the date of the previously accepted program, and we cannot tell lies and escape away and go to the new program. So when if a brahmachari shows such attachment, then people feel fed up that, he has gone for that option because that's the bigger option and things like that. So this teaches us one lesson that, one cannot take up too many things, and one has to keep commitment. Whatever responsibility one has taken, one has to fulfill it properly without becoming too greedy for too many things. That is one lesson we learn. And another interesting section here is Nimi Maharaja refusing to accept the material body. When I first heard it also, I was thinking maybe Nimi Maharaja is afraid of the material bodily pain, because material body means old age, disease, death, and all kinds of pain. But then the verse number 9 very clearly shows Nimi Maharaja's enlightened intelligence. He says that actually Mayavadis are afraid of the material body because they are afraid of the pangs of material miseries. But as far as devotees are concerned, they don't care, whether they have a material body in hell or in heaven or wherever they may have, they are happy to serve the Lord. And Prabhupada gives a very beautiful purport to that, the ninth verse. In somewhere in the middle of the purport, after the Naranam Majanam Mashindari, Prabhupada says, by paying life after life, generally, the Lord refers not to an ordinary birth, but a birth in which the moral and such a body is reserved of it. The devotee does not think like yogis and jnanis who want to receive the material body and become one with Brahman and another. The devotee does not like this idea. On the contrary, he will accept any body, material or spiritual, but he wants to serve the Lord. This is really great. So, and as the Prabhupada says, even if the devotee accepts material body, there is no cause of anxiety, since the devotee, even in material body, is liberated. So like the Prabhupada very clearly says that Nimi Maharaja getting the material body doesn't mean that he is afraid of the pangs of material misery. And this is actually evident in all the Vaishnava pillars, like Naam Bandhu, Davacharani, Vandhu, Madhbandhu, Kumbhi, Pakam, Guru Madhu, Narasam, Nabanetum, Sandhyarama, Amrutam, Tanam, Sandhane, Nathurantum, Avil Bhavi, Guru Bhavani, Bhavi, and Bhavan, Kulishatra says the same thing. I don't mind even going to Kumbhipaka hell. What the sweet of living in a material body on earth? So yeah, even Nimi Maharaj has the same consciousness. No problem. But still, in verse number 10, he says, why he does not want to accept the mental body? Because there is a difference between the soul rendering devotional service in the material world and the soul rendering devotional service in the spiritual world. In the material world, one has to perform devotional service while surrounded by lamentation, distress, and fear, and cutthroat competition, and all these things. Still, one can perform devotional service, one can try to do. But in the spiritual world, it's a world of no competition, competitionless society, and also a devotee has facility to render abundant devotion service. So the kalpataruls are there, and the cows are giving unlimited supply of milk, and the devotee has more freedom to render more service without the material situation, stunting his devotional service. So one time we asked his wellness, where is Maharaj? Maharaj, if a devotee waiting, gets sickness in his body, does he feel anxiety or frustration? So you are telling yes. Then one devotee asks, really? If he feels frustration, then how is his frustration and anxiety different from that of the current Padanyani? Do you also feel frustration by the material tanks? Then he gave an example. He said, yes, driving a car, sometimes, there was less air in the car, or a part of the car may be broken due to which the car is not able to go fast. And then he said, so the driver feels a little impeded. He has to go for a program or something very important thing, but the car is not facilitating. So he feels impeded. Similarly, a pure devotee, when he sees the material body impeding his service to Krishna, he feels some pain, and that pain is actually spiritual pain. It is not material pain. And because he wants full freedom to render service to Krishna freely. One time she'll go back then. I want to preach all the time, everywhere, he said. I want to preach all the time, simultaneously, everywhere, Prabhupada said. And then Prabhupada says, the true devotee also, just like Krishna is unlimited, the true devotee's desire to serve Krishna is also unlimited. The true devotee is greedy, a greedy servant, he wants to serve more and more. So therefore, Nimi Maharaj says that, why should I limit myself to this material body? Let my services to the Lord be unimpeded. Let me serve, like what he is saying. It's very beautiful. And here there is a tug of war. The sages and saints want Nimi Maharaj to live. And the demigods are also willing to help Nimi Maharaj live in the material body. And Nimi Maharaj, for a higher cause, does not want to live in the material body. So there is a big tug of war going on between them, and all of them actually have a noble purpose. And just like, the sages asked, why did Parikshit Maharaj refuse to live? Why did he want to die? Because his body was a shelter for all the praja. It was not proper for him to want to end his life. Then this way the sages are considering the praja's welfare. That is the king should live. Also, all three are speaking for a noble purpose. Sages, the demigods, and many in his own way. All are considering the ultimate noble purpose for which to either live in the material body or not. And there are no ordinary material considerations. Thank you, Master.
Thank you so much, Guru. Very nicely elaborated and Nimi section. Very nice. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hare. Tomorrow, Radhika Vallabhprabhu will give the next chapter. Guru Rava.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna. Ritraya Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jaya. Prabhupada ki.
Jaya.
Questions.
What were the different items?
So take questions from 9.10. Take second question. Second question for 4 marks. Then third question for 16 marks. Then 11th chapter. First question for 5 marks. Second question. No, second don't take. Third question for 8 marks. Then fourth question for 8 marks. 16, 21, 41, 9 marks. So Nimi's, 13th chapter, first question for 9 marks.
Okay.
Quote. No. Yes, we had some point. No? That's our proposed clarification in the purport. Actually, we fast forwarded many things. Good that Radhesham Prabhu highlighted many of those things. Demigods also have the power to benedict one with spiritual body. And that spiritual body is often understood to be subtle body. There is gross body, then there is subtle body. That is also considered spiritual body. Right? It is not that spiritual body. So some people say that Nimi is wandering in a ghostly body because he did not want to accept material body, gross body. So it's not like that. So Nimi was actually bestowed with a purely spiritual body which is devoid of gross and subtle contaminations, material contaminations, pure spiritual body, and he was rendering service to the Lord. He went back to the spiritual world or here or wherever. In his pure spiritual body, he was serving the Supreme Lord. I think. Okay. Actually, it's not the. That's what we were saying. We were discussing the other day also. Blessings are beyond the giver of blessings. In those days, how can somebody bestow, how can a yaksha, what is that, Kubera, bestow pure devotional service to Dhruva, who is much superior to him. So all these are there. But demigods are bestowing spiritual body on, on our Nimi. That doesn't mean Nimi out of nowhere, he is entering spiritual body. Nimi had sufficient qualifications to receive the spiritual body. Right? So demigods are giving their blessings. Okay, go ahead. Something like that. It's not only because of the demigods Nimi is going from material world to spiritual world or is engaging completely in service. Not like that. And another thing, demigods are also devotees of the Lord. By their well wishes, by their good wishes for Nimi, Lord can bestow his supreme mercy on him also. Like that.
Someone who is giving you good wishes or well wishes need not be superior to you. Yes, bro. Four are there. We are saying that four, or you have some point? Questions? Question? Okay. Let's first solve this four verses issue. Yes, sir. What are the four verses? Three you have memorized already today. Ek extra hai na, ninth verse. Nimika. Okay? No problem. Pramnana vrtiyasi lena ek. Then, what is that? Ram ka ek and Ram katha ka ek. Okay? Yes, Prabhu. Yuga avatar, what is it?
So there is a Yuga avatar in every Yuga, na? Okay. Am I right?
Correct.
So we didn't heard any description of Yuga avatars of, you know, so in this Lord Rama's pastime is in 24 Yuga cycle. And right now this is 27th Yuga cycle. Even in whole, you know, this chronology, they're giving, you know, all the description. So nowhere, you know, till now, except 2-3, you know, major, you know, either Manvantara avatar or this Krishna, Rama, except them. Didn't saw much Yuga avatar as any descriptions.
11th canto, 5 chapters are dedicated for the conversation between Nimi and Namayogendras. Right, in that, I think 4th chapter is an elaborate description of avatars. We'll learn more. Just wait. And Yuga avatars? Okay, any other? Nimi and Karabhajan. Any other questions? Comments? Both will go parallelly. Scripture I don't know, I heard from Prabhupada, and in my childhood also I heard there are many movies made on that. Savitri, Sati Savitri. Puran I don't know. Yes, Kanda Puran, Padma Puran, I think somewhere it must be there. Sun dynasty. Now, from 14th chapter onwards, we'll have Moon dynasty. Sita also Mithila, from a different line. Nimi's line, Nimi's line. No, because
somewhere I had that was there at the same. I should have said, sir, that some days she comes together, a relationship is something that.